26. With his cumbersome human and Letty entourage surrounding him, Joseph Adams left the living room of the villa. Foote and Lantano followed the two of them together. "Did Bros program the mocker?" Foote said to the dark young man. Young now, but as he had seen on the animated sequences of the satellite-obtained photographic record, capable of, or victim of, an oscillation into any section of his life track. Lantano said, "Since the machine came equipped with the alpha wave pattern of..." "Which can be obtained by any Yance man from any of the three major computers," Foote said, in a voice that did not carry to Joseph Adams, who was insulated by the clankings of his entourage. "And, Lantano, let's face it, you know that. Are you responsible for Lindblom's death? I'd like to know before we go into this. Is it important? Does it really make a difference?" Foote said, "Yes, but I'll go ahead anyhow. Because of the danger of not going ahead, the menace to their lives..." The moral issue had no bearing, not at this late point. Not since he had installed the Audvid bug. If ever anyone became the victim of his own professional ingenuity... "I programmed the mocker," Lantano said then. "Why? What had Lindblom done?" "Nothing. In fact, I was deeply in his debt, since through him I obtained the time travel rig. I wouldn't be here now without him. And before him, I..." The most brief, short, lingering hesitation. "I killed Higg." "Why?" "Higg I killed," Lantano said matter-of-factly, "to stop the special project, to save Runcible. So the special project would misfire, which it did." "But why Lindblom?" "Higg, I can understand, but..." He gestured. Lantano said, "For this, to indict Bros, to provide delineation that would convince Adams that Bros had killed his best friend, the only friend, as near as I can make out, that Adams had left in the world. I expected the mocker to escape. I didn't think Lindblom's leadys were that efficient, had been trained to move that fast. Evidently, Lindblom suspected something, but perhaps from some other quarter." "And what does this accomplish, his death?" "It forces Adams to act. Bros is wary. Bros, without having a rational, conscious reason, distrusts me and avoids me. Bros has never come within weapons distance of me, will never. I couldn't have reached him alone, by myself, without Adams' help. I've looked ahead. I know. Bros either dies tomorrow morning when he visits Adams' office, which is one of the few places Bros will go, or Bros continues on, if you can accept and believe this, another 20 years. "In that case," Foote said, "you did the proper thing." If this was true, and no way existed by which he could check. 20 years. Until Bros was 102 years old. A nightmare, Foote said to himself. And we are not out of it yet. We still must awake. "What Adams does not know," Lantano said, "we'll never find out, is a deplorable fact that should never have come into existence. Lindblom, up to the time of his death, was agonizing over a decision, had actually reached a decision. He was finally prepared to report on Adams' moral reservations toward the special project. He knew that Adams was on the verge of leaking enough information to Lewis Runcible to keep Runcible from being gaffed, from falling onto the hook. Runcible would have, based on Adams' tip, made the archaeological finds public. He would have lost his Utah land, but not his overall economic syndrome, nor his political freedom. Lindblom, he was loyal when it came down to it to the agency, to Bros, not to his friend. I have seen this, Foote, believe me. Within the next day, Lindblom would go through channels, and he knew exactly how, exactly which mediatory agency to make use of, to approach Bros at his Festung in Geneva. And Adams himself was afraid of this. He knew that Lindblom held his life in his hands, Adams' life. Due to Adams' rather unusual, among Yance men, higher inclinations, his scruples, his awareness of the evil underlying the special project from start to finish. He was silent as Joseph Adams, in his overloaded commercial flapple, managed to get off the ground to depart into the night sky. Foote said, "If it had been me, I wouldn't have done it. Killed Higg or Lindblom. Anybody. In his business, he had seen enough of killing." "But Lantano said. You are willing to participate in this now, in Brose's death. So even you, at a point, feel, recognize, that no other resource can be turned to except the ultimate one. I've lived 600 years, Foot. I know when it is and isn't necessary to kill. Yes, Foot thought. Evidently you do. But where, he wondered, does this sequence terminate? Will Brose be the last? There's no guarantee extended here. His intuition told him that there would be more. Once this sort of thinking, this method of problem-solving, began, it tended to develop its own momentum. Lantano, or Talbot Yancey, as he would soon be calling himself, and not evidently for the first time, had worked centuries to achieve this. Obviously, after Brose might come Runcible, or Adams, and, as he had thought from the start of this, himself. Whoever, as Lantano had put it, was necessary. A favorite word, Foot reflected, of those driven by a yearning for power. The only necessity was an internal one, that of fulfilling their drives. Brose had it. Lantano had it. Countless little Yance men and would-be Yance men had it. Hundreds, if not thousands, of Polcoms down in the ant tanks below, Foot realized, are ruling as true tyrants through their link with the surface, through their possession of the Gnosis, the secret knowledge of the actual state of affairs that obtain here. But with this particular man, the drive spans centuries. Who, then, Foot asked himself, as he followed Lantano toward a parked and waiting express Flapple, is the greater menace? 600-year-old Lantano, Yancey, Running Red Feather, or whatever his original Cherokee name was, who in the dotage stage of his cycle will become what is now merely a synthetic dummy based on him, bolted to an oak desk. A dummy which, and this will convulse a fairly extensive number of agency people of domain domini, all at once will become ambulatory and real. This, or the rule, by an aging, genuinely senile monstrosity who hides out in Geneva, blubbering over with plans to heighten and strengthen the dikes which support his existence. How can a sane man choose between these and still stay sane? We are cursed as a race, all right, Foot said to himself. Genesis is right. If this is the decision we are stuck with, if there are no choices but this, in which we must all become instruments of one or the other, units which either Lantano or Stanton Brose picks up and moves about, according to the direction of his grand design. But is this all? Foot asked himself, as, reflexively, he entered the Flapple, seated himself beside Lantano, who had once started up the engine. The Flapple rose into the gloom, leaving the hot spot of Cheyenne behind, and the half-completed villa with its glowing lights, which, no doubt, would, after all, see completion. The assembly, Lantano said, which constitutes the weapon, is in the back seat, carefully packaged in its original autofac carton. Foot said, Then you knew what I would choose. Time travel, Lantano said, is valuable. That was the extent of his laconic reply. They flew on in silence. There is a third choice, Foot said to himself. A third person of enormous power who is not a unit moved about by Lantano and not by Stanton Brose either. In his Cape Town resort villa, sunning himself in his vine-walled villa patio, lies Louis Runcible. And if we are out to locate sane men and sane decisions, we may find both there in Cape Town. I'll go through with it, as I said, Foot said aloud. The setting up of the weapon assembly in Adams' office in New York. And then, he decided, I'm heading for Cape Town, for Louis Runcible. I'm physically sick, he realized, made so by the aura of necessity that surrounds this man beside me, an order of political and moral reality which I'm too simple to fathom. After all, I've lived only 42 years, not 600. And as soon as I've arrived safely in Cape Town, Foote said to himself, I will get my ear up against news transmitters of every kind, waiting without break, without interruption, to hear, out of New York, that Stanton Brose, fat and putty-like and senile cunning, is dead. If the coup from within the agency itself, by its youngest, good God, 600 years old was young, brightest idea man, speechwriter, has been successful. After that, perhaps I, And hopefully Louis Runcible, if we can make a deal, will have some idea of what to do. We'll see our necessity. Because at that moment, Lord knew he did not. Aloud, he said, "You personally are ready, the moment Brose is dead, to claim before the Recon Dis-In Council to constitute the sole legitimate governing body, the planet-wide protector outranking General Holt here in West Dem and Marshall? Doesn't every one of the several hundreds of millions of tankers know that? Hasn't the Protector's supreme authority been established for years back?" "And the Letties," Foote said. "They'll obey you, not Holt or Horenzini, if it comes to that?" "What you are overlooking is this, my legal access to the simulacrum, that thing at the oak desk. I program it. I feed reading matter to it by way of Megavac 6V. So I've, in a sense, begun to make the transition already. I will simply blend with it, not by an abrupt abolition of it, but by..." Lantano gestured spasmodically. "The word is fusion." Foote said, "You won't enjoy it, being bolted to that desk. I think that part can happily be eliminated. Yancey may, in fact, begin visiting representative ant tanks, as Churchill did the bombed-out areas of England in World War II. Gottlieb Fischer did not have to counterfeit those sequences. Did you, in your centuries of past life, limit your public appearance to one faked scene in Gottlieb Fischer's documentary? One impersonation of an American general of World War II? Or..." And his extrasensory insight was keen now. It had sniffed something into the light. "Did you at one or more times already hold power? Power to some extent. Not like this. Not that of the planet-wide supreme protector." "I have to some extent been active. On a number of occasions. There is an evolutionary, historic continuity of my role." "Any name I would recognize?" The man beside him said, "Yes, several." He did not amplify, and it was obvious that he was not going to. He remained silent as the express flapple flew above the unlit surface of Earth toward New York City. "Not too long ago," Foote said cautiously, not really expecting to obtain an answer to this direct query, "some of my better interrogators, working with tankers who had bored through to the surface, extracted the, to me, fascinating fact that a weak TV signal, not the normal one from Estes Park, carried by the coax, had elliptically alluded, shall we say, to certain irregularities in previous official, supposedly authentic..." "There, I erred," Lantano said. "Then it was you." So now he knew the origin of that. Once more a hunch of his had proved correct. "Yes, it was my mistake," Lantano said. "And I almost cost Runcible his free existence, which for him would have meant his physical life. It was obvious I had to stop, once I discovered that Brose blamed the splice and the transmission on Runcible. All I was really doing was to set up Runcible for extinction by Brose's agents, and I didn't want that. I removed the lash-up cut into one of the peripheral shielded coax cables, but I was too late. Brose had already, in that weird, worn-out, crafty, infantile brain, hatched up the special project. The gear teeth had begun to turn, and it was all my fault. I was obsessed by what I had initiated, and at that point..." "You managed," Foote said tartly, "to impede it rather well." "I had to. The responsibility was so clearly mine. I had transformed a latent suspicion on Brose's part into a crisis. Of course, it goes without saying, I couldn't come forth. So I started with Higg. That seemed the only way to approach it at that late date, the only way to handle it so that it came to a stop, real stop, not just a temporary one. And without, as you say, exposing yourself." Lantano said, "It was a difficult situation and dangerous, not only to Runcible," he glanced at Foote, "but to me, and I did not intend to have that." God help me, Foote thought, to get away from this man. And out over the Atlantic in a flapple, alone, in contact with Runcible by vidphone, telling him I'm on my way. Suppose Runcible didn't listen. That anxiety-inducing thought, with every one of its ramifications, remained central in Foote's mind all the way across the United States to the agency buildings and the office of Joseph Adams in New York City. The office was dark. Adams had not yet arrived. Naturally, it'll take him a little while, Lantano said, to get the alpha wave pattern. Nervously, looking for him unusually taut, he examined his wristwatch, checked the dial which gave New York time. Maybe we should get the alpha wave pattern from Megavac 6V instead. You began setting up the assembly. The two of them stood briefly in the hallway outside Adams' office at 580 Fifth Avenue. Go on in while I get the pattern. Lantano started off rapidly. Foote said, There's no way I can get in. Adams and Bros have, as far as I know, the only keys. Staring at him, Lantano said, Can't you? My corporation, Foote said, possesses tools to obviate any lock in the world, no matter how intricate or obstinate, but he had none with him. They were all in London or scattered at field stations around the world. Then we might as well just stand here and wait, Lantano said, not pleased at all, but accommodating himself to the fact. They had to have Adams not only for the alpha pattern of Stanton Bros by which to render the weapon tropic, but simply and literally to gain access to the premises. The office, which evidently fat, huge, aging Bros, would enter bright and early in the morning ahead of its owner. One of the few places outside of Geneva where he apparently felt safe. And Geneva itself was impossible. If they had to alter their plans and make a try at Bros there, they were already finished. They waited. Suppose, Foote said presently, Adams changes his mind and does not come. Lantano glared at him. He'll come. The black, deep-set eyes were envenomed, even at mention of the possibility. I'm waiting exactly 15 more minutes, Foote said with quiet dignity, unafraid of the furious dark eyes. And then I'm getting out of here. The two of them continued to wait, minute after minute. And as each minute ticked past, Foote thought, he's not coming. He's backed out. And if he's backed out, we must assume he's contacted Geneva. We can't afford to make any other assumption than that we're waiting here for Bros's killers, waiting in this hall for our deaths. The future, he said to Lantano. It's a series of alternatives, is it? Some more probable than others? Lantano grunted. Do you foresee, as one alternative future, Adams informing Bros and saving himself at our expense? Lantano said tightly. Yes, but it's unlikely. About one chance in 40. I have my extrasensory hunch faculty, Foote said. And, he thought, it tells me that those are not the odds. The odds are far, far greater that we are trapped like pink-eared baby mice, floating, drowning, in a dish of honey, served up for extermination, for greedy, lip-smacking consumption. It was a very arduous and psychosomatically very unfortunate wait, and despite what Lantano's watch said, very long. Foote wondered if he could endure it. Could, or in the face of Bros's ability to move his agents about rapidly from this place to that, would.